gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant. Or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
First episode of the new year. Welcome back, Washington Walk-Ons fans. Drake and I, we talk about life for like 20 minutes, and it just wasn't relevant. So we skipped ahead to where we started talking about sports. We talk about Linderbaum. We talk about Tristan Wirfs. We talk about the semifinal games of the college football playoff. Talk about Iowa State's Fiesta Bowl, Iowa basketball, and a whole lot more. First episode of the new year. Let's go, baby. Let's have a day.
That's how old we got to.
Right.
Like, when did it happen that
right.
all of a sudden we think talking about stocks and futures is cool?
I just told Lauren the other day, I was like, she was like, I was like not paying attention to her. She's like, who are you texting? And I was like, I'm texting the boys. She's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, to be honest, half of our conversations now are either what stocks look good or what businesses are we going to try and open once we have the opportunity to?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's so stupid. The other half is completely, we can't even.
Definitely not suitable for this podcast.
Can't talk about it at all. I'm not sure on any platform. So that was interesting, opening the podcast. It's really funny.
I feel
funny.
Like we just have to tell people, hey, half hour we talked about life and unique perspectives.
Yeah.
And the second half we talked about sports.
Yeah, it's funny how Kevin, back to the whole put a little bow, if you will, on the holiday Christmas Kevin theme. Kevin has a real job, and so he's probably like a commonly recurring guest at this point rather than the third host. And y'all just have to like expect him to not be on the episode, and then if he is, it's a bonus. That's how you're going to have to treat it. But there were some sports things that happened. First off, last week before these games happened, some really good news for the Hawks. We talked about Zach Van Valkenburg coming back. The best center in college football, Tyler Linderbaum, set to return for the Hawkeyes. That is huge. I'm not sure. I guess I didn't really sit down and think about it, but I think everyone kind of thought that there was a pretty good chance he was off to the NFL.
I thought he was coming back 100%. I
Did
never
you?
Thought there was ever an opportunity. The fact that this is now news is shocking to me.
I don't know. Dude, he was I'm pretty sure he was first team All American on.
He was second.
He was second on a bunch of teams.
Yeah. I mean, I understand it. He's a beast, but he's still a young kid. He's from Iowa. He doesn't seem like the standard get your 3 years in and get out.
Right.
I expected him to come back.
Yeah, there's something about, you know who he is. It's just a repeat of what Sheriff did.
Yeah.
Sheriff was probably a top 20, top 15 draft pick his junior year.
Yep.
And decided, fuck it. Came back, had a great season, ended up being the fifth overall pick in the draft, legend.
And now just a recurring Pro Bowler.
Yeah, just a constant every year Pro Bowler. The reason the reason it's different for linemen is because your draft stock is not so much predicated on other people. You know, Tyler Goodson, Amir Smith, Marcette, Brandon Smith, those guys, if you're a junior and you have a great year, you basically prove what you can do. You show it on the field, and then you're like, well, is it going to get much better than that? You never know, right? It's based on quarterback play. It could be based on the offensive line, and if they're giving your quarterback time to get you the ball. It could be based on maybe you have a terrible defense the next year, and because you're getting scored on so much, you don't get as much the team overall isn't as good. Coach Ferentz used to talk about all the time how individual performances often – or individual awards and recognition often comes on the heels of great team play.
Yep.
And that's often oftentimes the case for skill players, right? But for a lineman, you can come back and you can – even on the shittiest team – you can absolutely dominate the guy across from you every play in a year where you go 0-for. Your team could be 0-11. But you could absolutely show physical dominance and competence at your position every single play, and your draft stock just won't go down that much. And then you add in the factors that he's literally from Solon. I mean, he's just the hometown boy.
And he's still a young kid.
Young kid.
He's an undersized,
like,
stud. You don't expect an offensive lineman, especially interior, to be a stud like that early from a guy that size. So he's still got time to put a little mass on.
He'll dominate for another year for the Hawks. The only thing you're risking is injury, which can happen. But, I mean, he could also go into the league next year and get absolutely blown up by Khalil Mack and – his career could be over too. So it's like, you know. And he'll dominate for the Hawks for another year, and he'll go and be another 7 or 8 year NFL vet and potentially longer, just like every other offensive lineman that Iowa produces. It's incredible. Tristan Wirfs, speaking of offensive linemen from Iowa, dude, he's like rookie of the year.
Yeah, if they give rookie of the year to an offensive lineman, it would probably be him.
He's insane, dude.
Yeah, he's playing out of this world.
I follow – mostly it comes from the Iowa reporters who, like, you know, they go and follow the reporters from the other teams and cities. And I see quotes all the time from people who cover the Buccaneers who are like, Buccaneers with an absolute miracle play – on Tristan Wirfs, like the best pick of the draft, like getting so much value. They're all just – they could not
think
be
about, think about what a like a long-tenured offensive tackle is worth to a team. You know, like a franchise offensive tackle, what is that worth to an organization?
Dozens and that's of millions Tristan. Of dollars. He's got so much money just waiting for – oh, my God. It almost grosses me out. Dude, he's got so much money. He already has so much money. He was drafted, what, 13th?
13.
I think he got like a 10 mil signing.
Ish.
And when he signs his first contract, his second contract, really, it's going to be worth – I mean, he's going to be – when Tristan Wirfs signs his next contract, he will be – he'll be one of the top five offensive linemen in the league.
At least.
That's my guess. He will be considered by everybody a no doubt top five offensive lineman in the entire league. And he has the natural ability to go and be that guy who, if all things fall into place, he sets, like, the next record for biggest offensive lineman contract ever.
I think left tackles get paid more than right tackles.
That's so true. He is a right tackle.
Yeah, he could definitely get the biggest right tackle contract ever.
Right
that
tackle.
That would surprise me.
100%.
Especially because his youth and his, like, explosive ability, those are two things that nobody else can match. Because, like, if you're going to go give Trent Williams or Jason Peters a top deal, like, sure, they've produced for a lot of years, but they're on the really back end of their of their careers. Maybe not Trent Williams so much, but Tristan, in 3 years, he's still going to be 24, 25 maybe.
24.
And they're going to be giving a 24-year-old kid only a four-year contract. They're putting him right into his prime. So, like, when he signs his third contract, that will be his prime contract.
It's so insane because men aren't physically fully developed until about 26 years old. And mentally. Like
it might be 30.
A male develops fully at, like, 26, 27, I think, for both mental and physical. And that will be – Tristan will be 8 years into the league, dude. I mean, God, good for him. Let's talk a little college football, all right?
Yep.
Three games in particular. The semifinals and then Iowa State yesterday. We'll start with the semifinals. Alabama handled Notre Dame.
It's just every single time Notre Dame gets into a big spot, they get the shit beat out of them. And, like, we can't really say much because we got put into a couple of pretty big games and got the shit beat out of us too. But for goodness gracious, man, it's every single time they show up to the game, you know that the other team's covering the spread no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. This game reminded me a lot of a – this is the worst comparison ever. But for those who are big time in the CIML conference in Iowa high school football, baby – this reminds me of a sophomore game, circa 2010, circa 2009, that I got pulled up to play for the sophomore team in Marshalltown. We were playing on a Thursday night versus Valley, back when Valley was – I mean, Valley's still damn good. They had a chance to make the dome this year. They had to forfeit. We played the Valley sophomores, and they beat us 60-7, but – the Marshalltown Bobcats were up 7-0 at one point because they handed the ball off to yours truly 13 out of 14 plays, and we gave everything we fucking had on a 7-minute drive down the field in the early first quarter.
You took up 7 minutes in a high school game and still gave up 60?
Dude, our defense was trash with a capital T. And then no one had any juice left. Alabama scored early here. Notre Dame put up one good drive where they bullied a little bit. But Devontae Smith, dude, that guy, their running back, wow.
What's funny is I saw a picture today on Instagram that was talking about how Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle were all on Tua's receiving core. And now Tua's in the NFL saying he wish he could have his college receiving core back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dude, Devontae Smith is – he's insane. He's like a true – you see a guy who is just meant to play a position.
Devontae Smith's not as impressive as Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy hasn't had that great of a year his first year. He's had a little bit of struggles.
Yeah.
But what Jerry Judy's potential is higher than Devontae's.
You've got their quarterback, running back, and receiver all in the Heisman race.
Mm-hmm.
You have between quarterback, receiver, running back, you have a trio that's in the conversation for best running back, wide receiver, quarterback trio ever at a single school.
And they're all going to win their best player in the country at respective position.
Yeah. Last year – Clyde Edwards-Helaire is from LSU, right?
Yep.
So last year you definitely had another consideration because Joey.
Last year was the best, potentially the best college football team
of all time
because they had Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase.
Is insane.
Yeah. Don't forget about Jamar Chase.
and Ja'Marr Chase, and then obviously Joey B and Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And they had Randy Moss kid playing tight end for them.
So stupid. They're the best. They're the best college football team full time, single year. They're the best all time. Alabama handled Notre Dame. Notre Dame should have been in the playoffs. I looked like an idiot because we got on here and was like, it can't be Notre Dame, right? Right before the Final Four came out, but then they gave it to Notre Dame anyway. And this is why. Like, at this point, I think, like, throw Cincinnati in there. I mean, screw it.
Cincinnati had Georgia by the balls, man.
By the balls.
They let that game go. They let that game go.
Yeah. What sucks is when a team like that plays a big team and they've got them, at some point it turns and they start to try and play not to lose. And that's what kind of started to happen. And it's – I mean, that kid murdered a field goal to win that game. Good for him. So Alabama, easy money. They're favored by a touchdown, I believe, over Ohio State, who – let's talk about it. Absolutely put on a show against Clemson.
I didn't think they had near that much firepower. I was not all in on Justin Fields. I was all in on him as an athlete, just not all in on him as a quarterback, especially after I saw how discombobulated he looked against Northwestern. Like, I just thought somebody who had the capability to dominate a team who's been in the national championship 5 years in a row, just to absolutely throttle him. I just didn't think he had that in him.
So there's a lot of things about this game. What's weird about this game is I have it up on ESPN, the box score and everything, and it's the same game. They played the exact same game except for the second quarter. 14-14 in the first. Both scored a touchdown in the third. Both scored a touchdown in the fourth. But it was 21-0 in that second quarter to put them up three touchdowns for the rest of the game. And you and I said on last Monday's podcast that this is a two-team race. It's Alabama-Clemson.
Yep.
Ohio State, and now everyone's making the jokes on Dabo, which are funny because it's fun to make fun of people in the social media world, whatever. But he wasn't wrong to say, how do you put Ohio State up there? Their resume isn't – it isn't great. Like, they just don't have enough on their resume. And I was unsure as well. You look at them play Northwestern, you're like, eh.
They looked bad, dude.
Bad.
Justin Fields didn't look like he could make a decision.
Granted, they had some guys out, but
he had more touchdowns, or equal as many touchdowns as he did incompletions against Clemson, and he had, like, a 8 QBR against Northwestern.
Dude. Not to mention, he went full-on C.J. Beathard and just – I mean, he could have been internally bleeding, hemorrhaging, broken.
So how about 47 not learning his lesson to keep his eyes up?
Yeah.
He tried to Shazier himself.
Oh, boy.
The kid tried his damnedest to Shazier himself.
I did see it. It's so tough in football. Like, what's your thoughts on the targeting rule? Because it really is tough, and I understand that it's built for both sides.
So, like, as the targeting rule, I think, is horseshit. I think an ejection should have to be egregious. Do I think that kid deserved an ejection? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Does he really, really need to reevaluate the way that he tackles people? Yes, because he's going to end up on a spine board if you do that too many times. Like, your spinal column can't handle that. So the rule is there to save both parties, and I get it. But the fact that they're kicking people out, or then if you get kicked out for a potentially bullshit call in the first place in the game prior, you could still have to sit out if it happened in the second half.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that now ejections for one, like, split-second play are costing people multiple games, it's just ridiculous.
What's tough about it is I get that the officials and those who make the rules and football in general and the community and the players and the coaches and everyone wants it to be safer, right? We're in the world of science and data, and we can fully – it's not the 1970s anymore where it's like, fucking be a tough guy. tough it up. Like, coach, my C4's broken. Put your helmet back on. It's like we know. Like, you're living proof that football does a little bit of damage, you know?
What?
Yeah. Dude, you're a psycho. Yeah, I mean, you've got like 6 of 10 screws loose.
What? I only have 10 screws left?
Yeah, but it's like if you screwed something to the wall, the 4 screws are still pretty solid. Like, they're gonna hold it up. But if at any point in time there's an earthquake and it starts to rely on the other 6 screws, you're fucked. That's you. But we know, we see the data, we see the CTE numbers. Yeah, dude, you look, yeah. We see that it messes people up, and we can't have these neck injuries, these head injuries, and so we're trying to make it safer. The problem is the game is inherently dangerous, and you're never going to be able to take out what I call a football move. Too many good football plays are getting guys ejected from games.
Facts.
What is the punishment? I don't know, because when a guy goes full speed, dude, when I was playing and I got my limited opportunities to go down and headhunt somebody, I get that one play every 20 minutes on punt where, like, maybe, just maybe, the guy decides to return it and he might cut back and I might be able to take a shot. In that 8 seconds of me running down the field, nowhere in my mind does it cross, oh, you better watch where your head goes or else you're going to get ejected. Like, no.
Every single time I ran down the field, I was trying to separate somebody from their consciousness.
And so the ejection just isn't the right deterrent, because it only comes into your conscious thought process afterwards where you see the flag and you're like, oh, no, I'm not going to be able to play. But before you made that hit, at no point did you think, I'm worried about getting ejected here, because you're just playing the game muscle memory like you have been for the last 15 years of your life, and you're just going to lay someone out. Hey, everybody, before we get into today's episode, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your sports podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, that's us, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of all that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is you get all of that for $15 a month. That's the same rate as any other hosting site, and that's just what they would charge you for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. I feel like I should be like George Bush every time I say the word W. bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join. The ejections are not working. And a lot of times, you can't even hit a guy. Like, a lot of good plays now, even when guys have their heads
you
up.
You can't stop an offensive player from getting a positive gain anymore. That is going to get you ejected.
Yeah, it's getting really bad. And I don't know the answer, but... he hit Justin Fields hard, dude. He got crunched. I mean, there's no way to describe it. And Beathard, probably visibly the toughest guy we played with. What Justin Fields did to come back in that game and threw a dart for a touchdown to his tight end like 10 minutes after it happened, came out, played the – I mean, I don't know what actually happened, if he has something broken. I don't even know if they'll reveal that because they still got a game left. But
Hit him in the soft spot.
Yeah, that was one of the toughest performances I've seen. And for that, for the entire team to just continue to dismantle Clemson, it was that was something. I did not expect that. So Ohio State will take on Alabama. And I don't know what that looks like. It's a touchdown spread. Alabama.
I'll tell you what. I think Ohio State has as good of a chance as anybody possibly could, because watching Alabama play, they are not truly elite in the front seven. They have lockdown corners, but Ohio State has very, very good receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that strong. They're strong. They're not that strong in the front seven. And Ohio State has a lethal zone read game and short passing game off of that. Ohio State has a real chance. But they have to stop Alabama from scoring 60.
You got to stop their offense somehow. Olave is an incredible receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Master Teague, I think his name is.
That was their starting running back.
And Sermon.
Trey Sermon's better than Master Teague.
Those two are just as good as Alabama players.
Mm-hmm.
And Fields has clearly proven that he is a dude.
Yep.
If they play like they did against Clemson, they've got all the shot in the world. It's just the fact that they've, on film, multiple times, proven that they can be given some trouble. And Alabama hasn't one time this year, at least offensively. Like, no one has stopped them.
They're too elite.
And we know what happens. History repeats itself. We know what happens when a great offense can't be stopped. Even if you can score a shitload on their defense, it doesn't matter. Because look at LSU last year. If the other team scores 100, it doesn't matter if you score 90. You lose. And that's this kind of thing. So it's going to be about Ohio State's defense stopping Alabama's offense. And I don't know if that can happen. It will be a good game to watch, though.
Yep.
Finally, the Iowa State Cyclones, man. Best team in history, baby. Best team in history.
That's the best Iowa State team in history?
That's the best Iowa State team in history. They're not going
to them, man.
They're not gonna deny that. Because there's really no other – I don't even know how many times they've won 8 or 9 games in program history. Like a couple times. I'm not going to do the research on it because I don't care. But that's the best team in history. They have some dudes on that team. They're tight
they
ends.
Do.
Purdy, more often than not, plays great.
Their running back's a stud.
Running back is an absolute stud. They have two tight ends at least who are really good. One of them coming back next year, and they have a couple really good experienced defenders. Rose, their linebacker, and Eisworth was a good DB for them. Best team in history, 9-3 Fiesta Bowl champions, but they don't have the Cy-Hawk Trophy, brother.
No trophy.
They don't have the trophy.
And they still have it for like 1,500 days in a row now.
Yeah, and to the end of time, they will. You will never get an Iowa State Cyclone to admit that Iowa would have beat them this year. And maybe they wouldn't know.
But guess who has less losses and more trophies in their building?
Yeah, I mean, It's gonna be this little asterisk for all time of, yeah, our best season ever, Fiesta Bowl win. Oh, nice. How bad did they beat Iowa that year? Oh, they didn't play.
Ah.
They didn't play. It's a weird little asterisk that I'm glad that we don't have to deal with. Because I'll be honest, that would upset me. If I was an Iowa fan, I mean, I am an Iowa fan. If we had our best year all year and we went like 11-1 or 11-0, but we didn't play Iowa State, and Iowa State went like 10-1 or 11-0. There would be that little asterisk of like, well, we didn't get to play the Clones and beat Iowa State that year and get that trophy.
Yep.
And what's great too is like Iowa State going through this great year that like they have to come back and earn the trophy next year. Like it's been 6 years or whatever. It's incredible.
Yeah, it will have been like 7 years at that point.
It's amazing.
Yeah, 7 seasons since they won one.
So, good for them. Anybody that likes Iowa and Iowa State or cheers for Iowa State that listens to this podcast, which has to be a very small amount of people. Congrats on that. Matt Campbell's a great coach. He seems to me like the guy that stays around.
I don't think he's staying, dude.
You don't think so?
Because, like, what attachment does Matt Campbell really have to Ames, Iowa? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, his dream, his all-time dream for his whole life and his whole career and the culmination of his whole life's work is probably to be a head coach in the NFL. And when you take a dog water, hot shit, tired poop team like Iowa State and turn them into the Fiesta Bowl champs, like, that's a hell of a resume. And he's got a compounding good resume at this point. And I think somebody in the NFL is going to pay him a bunch of money and he's going to take it.
I think you're right. That or a better college program. Because here's
– I don't know if he'll leave for a better college program.
There's not any open right now. There's no better program to go bring. So here's the issue is he's got Iowa State at its all-time program peak.
Yep.
He just had the best year, and maybe you can go back and find a better year, but it's inarguably the top two or three seasons in Iowa State history.
And he probably has some recruiting leverage at this point. They've got a good quarterback. They've got a first-team All-American running back, and because he got voted first-team All-American. And so, like, they've got pieces that they're building that bigger recruits can be like, huh, you know, it might not be that terrible to go there.
Right. But if you've taken a program to its peak, he's not a dumbass. What are the odds that Iowa State – Ames, Iowa, can sustain this type of success long-term, even over a five-year span, right? What are the odds that Iowa State for the next 5 years in a row can win eight games? Just do what Iowa's done. Just win eight games in a row for 5 years. Probably not great, and he knows that. You've got programs like Texas. They just fired Tom Herman yesterday, and evidently Alabama's offensive coordinator Sarkisian is going to come over and be the head coach. Texas,
and we've already seen how well Sarkisian works out as a head coach. We saw what he did at USC.
Yeah, but you look at a program like that, and Texas, they've been at the tippity top. They've won it all. They've got tradition. That's the kind of program where it's not like Iowa State, where if I stick around at Iowa State, what can I really do? Am I really going to make Iowa State a national title contender on a yearly basis? No, you're not. You're not even the best team in your state, and the best team in the state, Iowa, is not a yearly national title contender and probably won't ever be. It's just there's some logistical, geographical things that make that not a real expectation. But Texas? Vince Young, I mean, they've got some tradition there where you go to a program like that, or you go to a program like Michigan if Harbaugh leaves, or you go to somewhere in the SEC or Florida, a place that's been at the top, there's this, oh, we've been there before, we can get back there. And so if he's looking for that, he can go find it somewhere else in college, or you're right, he can go to the NFL. It's the tippity top for all coaches. You get to coach in the league. And he's going to have a lot of calls and a lot of interest for places in the league.
When there's guys like Adam Gase who get recurring contracts in the NFL
over Adam Gase.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I could at least get along with all my players much better.
Jesus.
I could at least have my players wanting to show up on Sundays, unlike Adam Gase's stupid robotic ass.
He's a weirdo, dude. And
so, like, the fact that there's people like that in the league – who just clearly aren't cutting it, they're going to be looking for new, fresher faces that can get along with players and understand the new age of players and et cetera, et cetera. So I think he's got a good chance.
Yeah. The idea of KF, it's very romantic,
mm-hmm.
but it just doesn't happen anymore. because that's the way that society's built. We want results like this. I want something new.
How about people talking about Tua being a bust and the Dolphins drafting another quarterback?
Unbelievable.
Like, they've hardly given the kid a fair shot. He's coming off a horrific injury. He didn't start the season. He's had some reasonably okay performances. It's his rookie year. He was a young kid coming out of college anyways, and people are already trying to label this kid a bust. He's 21 or 22 years old.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Now, if you're a big-time player who is going to go and try and be a franchise guy in the NFL, or you're a big-time coach who, you know, Scott Frost coming to Nebraska, yada, yada, you get 2 to 3 years now, maybe. You got to do something in those years, or else, you know. And Matt Campbell has done that at Iowa State. But what more can he do? I don't know. Maybe he's fine with turning. It just seems like maybe there's more. He's a young guy. Iowa State is not going to be a top 10 team year in, year out. Maybe this year and next year? Maybe. It's not going to happen, though. It's so tough. It's so tough to be Alabama and Nick Saban. Like, people don't understand it. It's so tough to be Clemson. And you know, coaches are always looking for something a little bit different. I don't know. It'll be really interesting. Who knows? Washington walk-ons 170.
What about Iowa basketball, dude?
Oh, we didn't even talk about it.
They had a barn burner.
Absolute barn burner at the rack, dude.
Is that what that place is called?
I think so. I'm not.
So yeah. Listen, Iowa kind of has Rutgers' number out there in close games. 2 years ago, my guy Joey hit the game winner.
That's this year, stupid.
This year, my guy Joe had a little bit of a tough day. Not everybody's going to bring their best game every day. But the guy that I freaking love on this squad is the third string point guard. Number 4, Ulis.
Ulis, yeah.
Didn't know the kid existed until yesterday.
Yeah.
And he plays hard as hell. He plays so gritty. He's fast. He's a good player.
Murray, obviously, incredible day.
Yep.
And I said it to somebody on Twitter. When you're a young guy, there's this energy and this, I don't know, this gusto, this energy about young dudes where they go play unconsciously out of their mind effort-wise. Because when you're a young dude, effort's name of the game. Coaches preach it in every sport, at every level. You can find your way onto the court with effort. Or the
when you're a young dude, the pain of pushing your body is actually incredible. Like when you're out in a competitive situation and you push your body hard enough where you feel exhausted, mm-hmm. you're like, this is incredible. I've never felt so alive.
Yeah, and when you get Ulis or Murray, you get those young guys out on the floor, they are going to give you stupid psycho effort because mm-hmm. even if they don't shoot well, even if they turn it over, this, that, whatever, if they give stupid psycho effort, they rebound, they play defense, they know that it'll be worth it to the team and that the coach will see. And so it's just not that Garza doesn't play with effort or that Jabo doesn't play with effort. It's a different kind of intensity for these young guys who go out there and they flip that switch and it's 150 miles an hour. And that's what – and then when they're playing well and they're playing at that speed, it's like, holy shit, dude, we got some dudes. And so you saw that from Ulis and Murray yesterday. Garza, people were like upset that he didn't have a great day. He had 25 points.
Mm-hmm.
What? Didn't have a great day, had 25 points?
I'll tell you what. So I was talking to my mom about this. I don't like the way we run the second team offense that much because Luka's still in there, but they're not having him dominate the ball. Mm. So like if you're gonna use his minutes up, like he was running up and down the floor a lot with the second unit because the second unit was not getting a whole lot of cohesiveness. Mm. We weren't putting together long offensive possessions or anything, and he wasn't dominating the ball. And I'm just thinking like, if he's not going to dominate the ball with the second unit, why is he on the court?
Yeah, give
because
him a
rest. You can give somebody else the minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't quite understand that. But
the first team offense and the first couple guys off the bench when we got four out of the five starters in, it feels very how it should. Mm-hmm. You know, we got an experienced team. They know where to work the ball. We're running the right sets. We're running the right plays. It feels very smooth. When we have a majority of bench guys in, it feels very AAU. It feels like just a little bit travel squad, like travel team.
Yep.
Like we're playing in an AAU tournament on a Saturday. Let's try an ISO here. Like let's just get somebody an open shot. And it doesn't feel like the offense clicks quite as much. Like it does. And it's not going to, but it needs to more. And I agree. Don't waste Garza if you're not going to use him correctly. But it's also really hard to do, right? Like it's a lot easier said than
but
done.
But is it though? Because the guy just got bullied off the block because he was tired. Then he said, you know what, screw it. Let me get the ball at the top of the key. And then he took him two crossovers up and underneath the rim.
Dude.
If he can, so first of all, he showed that he can pick and pop from 25 feet.
Ridiculous.
He already did that. And then he can take that same pass and take it off the dribble all the way to the opposite side of the rim. Yeah, so, like, is it really that hard for him to dominate the ball?
No. And another interesting thing that happened yesterday was McCaffrey went out with an ankle, and a lot of people were talking about how it was very evident that with him out of the game, he's clearly the best person to feed Luka.
And he's our point guard. He's our best point guard.
And how that affected kind of what we were just talking about. So hopefully he's healthy and comes back. But the depth on this team, like
10 deep.
It's very comforting knowing, like, when we bring a guy off the bench, it's not like we're giving up a lot. Like they still bring this weird kind of almost very unique to the individual thing that, like, oh, now we got this guy on the floor. This opens up a little bit of a different option of how we attack this, but we don't lose a lot of firepower. It's really awesome. And I actually think that our 6 through 10 oftentimes defend better than our first five. One, because they have to. They're going in. They're fighting for more playing time. They're giving that effort. Our first five, like, all the time, like, aren't great at defense. Like, I watched.
So, I was about to say I completely agree with you because I would say that we have at least two very lackluster defenders, but maybe three lackluster defenders in our starting lineup.
It's not for lack of effort. Occasionally it is. Like, sorry, we're just not quite as athletic. We can't go one-on-one defensively. It's just not there.
Listen, Steph Curry has gotten mutilated for his defense at times. And it's not because Steph Curry is a non-effort guy. Like, he's not playing defense like James Harden, but Curry still gets beat up for his defense quite frequently. And it's like, when you're Bohannon and you're coming off a hip injury and you're already an undersized, under-talented shooter to start, like, you're just not going to be the best defender. When you're C.J. Frederick and you're a 47 or whatever percent three-point shooter like he is, he just maybe not going to be the best defender.
Right.
So it comes with the territory.
But you bring in Toussaint, you bring in Keegan Murray. Those guys work their ass off. They're good at defense. So,
and this Hawkeye team has not for the past – maybe not all the past games, but more recently than not, they haven't been playing real clean ball, but they're still finding a way to get it done. So, like, I think at some point they should, especially late in the season, they should just really get some more clean ball going.
Yeah. It is.
Because we had, like, 20 turnovers yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, who turns the ball over 20 times and wins?
Nobody. Like,
but we did.
I know. It's so nice to fall back on, well, we didn't play good here, but we still won. You know, it's nice.
It is refreshing to not have to put them in the loss columns when you don't play good, though.
Right?
Iowa basketball is notorious for putting them in the loss column.
Yeah.
So playing kind of shitty and coming out with a W against a top 15 team feels pretty good.
It feels amazing. Rutgers is a good-ass team, and their big dude is athletic as hell. They got a guy who –
They have a few dudes, number 24, number 0, number 15.
They're insane.
They have studs.
They're insane. Yeah. That Rutgers, I believe the stat was Rutgers had won like 24 out of the last 25 home Big Ten games or something like that. They're good. I mean, they're good as hell.
Dude.
They're probably they're a Sweet 16 team, dude. Like, that's
– probably. What they did to us on the offensive glass was really frustrating.
Yeah, dude.
Like, that's one part of our game we have to clean up bad is if we just continue to give teams second chance after second chance, it's going to be harder to beat them later in the season.
100%. 100%. Just got a text from our guy, Connor Kane. He was out in Colorado. There was a Polecat Road out there.
No kidding.
He sent me a picture. I told him, dude, we got to have you on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Brother.
Somebody, if you guys are entrepreneurial, business-minded, and savvy, you're really going to enjoy the conversation if we have one with Connor because the guy took what the guy really maximized what Iowa football tried to get us to maximize in networking and building your own personal
brand system.
Ultimate entrepreneur. He took advantage of the schooling that he got, and now he's making incredible money living a life that he wants to live.
And living the life where he has time to do what he wants, and he makes money on the road, and he's not stuck in
he's got a picture on his Instagram of him skydiving over Abu Dhabi.
It's incredible, dude. His story and his life over the past just 7 years since we've met him, I cannot wait to talk to him.
We're working on Kenny Man. So we've got a couple of really cool post-football stories coming for the podcast.
You know the other one I want to have on that I just recently followed, like last week, is Gare. He's doing real estate.
Oh, real estate.
And killing it with his wife or maybe fiance. I'm not sure if they're married or not. And he was – dude, Gare hit hard as hell, dude.
Half of my stories on this podcast involve Anthony Gare.
I know, and I can't wait to talk to him about – I hope he wants to come on the podcast because I would love to talk to him about business because he's an entrepreneur too. He created a product and call it – like
his puzzle cards.
Yep. There's so many cool guys that we're going to reach out to bring on. I'm so excited for this offseason. And fuck Kevin because he's never here. That's it. 177 of the Washington Walk-Ons. We'll be back talking at you again. Thanks for joining us. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo. We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams. Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today. So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram, too.